You're listening to Action Magazine, the podcast, the weekly download on what's shaping in the future of film, festivals, and the creative voices behind entertainment. I'm your host, Victoria, filmmaker, documentarist, and editor-in-chief of Action Magazine. From solo insights to on-the-ground festival coverage and stories from across the creative world, this podcast keeps you in action. Welcome to episode 14 of Action Magazine, the podcast. In today's episode, we're going to have a conversation with Ben Blaine from Blaine Brothers about their new short film, Undeletable. Let's get to it. Hi.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. I have the end of a cold, but apart from that, I'm
all right. Oh, no. Not the best day, then. Thank you so much for joining this meeting. I'm Victoria. I'm the editor-in-chief of Action Magazine. Just so you know a little bit about us, we give voice to emerging creatives, emerging filmmakers, try to inspire them, give them voice to share about their projects and all of that. So it's always great to talk to filmmakers out there in the world to get to know their projects and their passion. So let's get started. Can you introduce a little bit about yourself and the movie?
Cool, yeah. So my name is Ben Blaine. I mainly work with my brother Chris, and we write, direct, and edit. I think that's the main things. We've had a long history doing short films, music videos, and we made a feature film called Nina Forever, and then we've sort of done some TV stuff as well. But we love short films, and we sort of keep coming back to the genre. So we've just made this short just made this short film starring Sofia Di Martino, probably most famous for Loki.
Yeah.
It was actually kind of going right back to our roots. So Chris kind of shot it and I did the sound, and it's sort of us and Sofia walking up a hill as she leaves a disastrous answer phone message.
That's amazing. And how long did it take to shoot the film, and how long was the post-production process?
Yeah, so I mean, it's like I said, it's a funny one because it's sort of it's a film that, so it's based on the actual voicemail, disastrous voicemail that I left for my dad's lover after he died, and so it kind of has sat in my head for a long time as a story that I wanted to tell, and a situation that I thought was both funny and sad, and kind of made me think about how life works. Mm-hmm. It has sort of sat around for ages. Also, we were very clear, it's shot in one single take.
Yeah.
And so we were very clear that kind of like there's quite a lot of factors you have to take into account when you're doing something like that. Because you don't, in order to kind of like create visual interest and tempo and all that kind of stuff, you're limited. You know, a lot of the things that you'd normally do, you can't do. So Chris was very adamant, being Chris, that it had to be cold, and we had to see the breath coming out of her as she spoke, which, as we discovered when we did our feature film, Nina Forever, it can be very cold. And if you're in the wrong atmospheric conditions,
yeah,
you just have cold actors and you see nothing beautiful.
Yeah.
So with this one, he sort of like basically gave us this sort of two windows each year, which were the only kind of points where this particular part of the world where we wanted to film it, it would work. So we probably let 2 or 3 years go past where we kind of just weren't able to shoot it at the right moment. So that aside, the actual shoot itself was just a morning's work. We did 17 takes to get it right. And used the last one.
That's amazing. Wow, you used the last one. That's funny. And this is a story that is so personal to you. How was it to approach that and, you know, be vulnerable enough as an artist, as a filmmaker, to put that out there? And how do you want audiences to feel when they watch that?
I don't mind how audiences feel. That's up to audiences. We had a fantastic screening. It's just screened at the Bolton International Film Festival. And it was really good fun because the short films before it had been quite serious. And then this film starts, and The start is particularly kind of serious and quite emotional, and then there's a point in the film where the kind of the sense of humor comes, and like two people in the room laughed, and you could also feel that kind of like a bunch of people in the room were like, "Yeah, don't laugh. How dare you? What's going on? You can't laugh at this." And then there's a period where there's this beautiful kind of tension in the room between kind of, "Am I supposed to laugh? Am I allowed? Is it okay that I'm laughing at this?" And yeah. I found that incredibly enjoyable set in the back of the room. So,
I
yeah,
bet.
I don't mind. I don't mind how people respond to it. You know, I hope that it gives you all the things.
Exactly. And you mentioned it was shot in a single take. How was that approach? Because a lot of people are afraid to do that in films because it's difficult, requires a lot of rehearsal and a lot of, being on the same page with the other members of the crew. How did you take on shooting that way?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we've become increasingly interested in, not kind of like only doing single takes, but in terms of the power of the edit. Like we've edited a lot for other people, and I think that it's ironic then that in our own work we're kind of taking the edits out. But I think that it kind of you start out and you just kind of cut everything, and then you start realizing kind of like, oh, it's a really powerful thing, and each edit has a meaning. And so trying to find those moments in our storytelling where it's like, well, this doesn't want an edit and this does want an edit. It's like, and actually sort of being very conscious of that process is quite important to us. So yeah, with this one, I mean, obviously again we were lucky, you know, we sort of deliberately designed the shoot so that it would just be there was five of us in total, but there was Sophia and me and Chris and then two friends of ours who were stopping us being hit by the traffic because we were walking backwards up the hill. And so we kind of paced it through, and we didn't really rehearse it that much because we sort of wanted to catch Sophia's performance as it happened. But we did kind of, you know, we did 17 takes, and across, you know, like the learning process across that was definitely, you know, there are times when we get ahead of her, and so she kind of moves into a wider shot, and then times when we let her catch up. So you're sort of thinking about changing shot size all the way through and what that means depending on where she is in the script. And yeah, those were the, you know, and then I suppose with her performance as well, we sort of talked. I think she'd never done anything quite like this. And I think we sort of talked a lot with her about, again, how she had to edit it. You know, it's like how normally you'd sort of do a serious pass and then you'd do a more, you know, a sillier pass and you'd put those together in the edit and you'd sort of build the performance. And then realizing that kind of like, well, that's not there for us in this. So it's like, you know, really pacing it out and really sort of finding the kind of emotional shape of it. That was definitely part of the process. Yeah, that was good fun. But yeah.
Yeah, that's an amazing challenge to take. And from the script to the filming to the post-production, how was all that together? Did it change from the beginning? Did it turn out to be something completely different than what you pictured in the script?
It's very close. It's very close to the feeling of it. I mean, in honesty, I can't actually. I've not gone back to the script since we did it, so I don't know if Sophia's got the words exactly bang on as I wrote them, but it doesn't matter. Like you know, the intention behind it is exactly what we wanted it to be. Yeah. So yeah, it's funny. You know, our work does often change quite a bit, but in this case, it didn't.
Awesome. And it's a single take, but what was some key elements that you t made, like composition-wise or color-wise in post-production or sound-wise, that made all the difference to bring the tone of the film alive?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, so obviously it's in black and white, which was something that I'd sort of thought of initially, but we sort of hadn't decided upon. And obviously, you know, we shot digitally, so you know, we had color. And then when I think in the end, there were about seven takes that were worth considering. And so we got back together with Sophia and the three of us. We projected them at Chris's flat, and we kind of like watched all these seven takes to see kind of which ones meant most to, you know, any of the three of us. And we did that initially in color, and then we started doing it in black and white. And it was interesting to see how moving it into black and white did seem to give it more impact. I think it kind of gives you more focus on her face and more, it sort of narrows you down. And I think
Definitely.
also there's, I think it's interesting with the perspective of it in terms of you're with her as she's leaving the message,
Yeah.
but it does actually start with the answer phone kicking in. And I think all the way through, there's a game between being with her and her emotion, but then also being with the woman hearing the message. And
Yeah.
that kind of shift in perspective. And I think that there's something, obviously we changed the Academy aspect ratio as well to kind of like give it that sense
Yeah.
of confinement, you know, which again is sort of like, you know, and the choice of it being a single take was again this like, shh, it is a single message. And so it is this kind of wanted it to be this kind of like gasp of air, this kind of like contained moment. But then we did, so I boomed it, I recorded it, the sound on a boom, but we also recorded the sound into the phone that Sophia was using.
Interesting.
And we also, she did have a personal mic on her, which worked for some of the takes and not for all of the takes. But, you know, so in principle, we had these like three sources of sound. And then with our mixer, Steve, who we've worked with a lot, we kind of added in, used the different sound sources to create different textures and to kind
Yeah.
of like create that sense, that distance at times and more closeness at times. At times you're much more with her and you kind of much more feel her emotion. And then at other times it's a much more kind of distant feeling, kind of like you are hearing this
Yeah.
message and it has that distortion and that kind of distance to it. Yeah. So yeah, those were lots of, again, lots of things that we found in post-production to kind of give it that shape and give it that emotion.
Yeah, definitely. Those creative choices make a lot of difference to make the film so unique. You mentioned you work with your brother. How is that? How is collaborating with him? Do you guys think the same way, or is it opposites? How do you make that work?
Yeah, I mean, we do think the same way. I mean, it's been a long time and it's been challenging, you know. It's like we've had our definite ups and downs. But I think it's been really, really good. I think it's been very healthy for us to work through those.
Yeah.
And it's also, you know, fundamentally, our work is always grounded in collaboration. And I think that all filmmaking is.
Yes.
And I think a lot of the industry sort of almost encourages you not to see that. Like, I think there's a lot of kind of emphasis on directorial voice and
Yeah.
directorial vision and it being the kind of like this one person's take. And whilst I think it's very important that you have a clear creative intention, I also
Exactly.
think anything creative is a collaboration. Like,
Yes.
it's always is a game. And yeah, I think it's been much easier for us to kind of then work with other people and to let actors in to our process because it's always a joint process, you know, it's always a
Yeah.
duality. And so for to kind of have a third voice or a fourth, you know, whatever is always easier like that. And I think we did this thing years ago where we took a bunch of short films up and down the country in a van and we had to screen them twice daily.
Wow.
Yeah, which is amazing. It was amazing because, again, I think as filmmakers, you're very rarely allowed to spend time with audiences.
Yeah, that's true.
And it was fascinating watching films, the same set of films, with different audiences
Yeah.
and seeing how the audience shapes the film, how they change the film, and how it becomes a
Exactly.
different film depending on who you're with. And what the energy in the room is, and what everyone's liking and not liking, and you know, you always think of film as a very kind of fixed, solid medium,
Yeah.
rather than like live theatre. And
Exactly.
it was fascinating watching it. It's fascinating watching it with audiences and seeing how live a film is and how much of a collaboration it is with strangers. Like that's
Yeah.
the actual thing that you're doing is you're collaborating with people you haven't met, and you're going,
Yeah.
"Here's this idea. How do you respond to that?" And yeah.
Exactly. And everyone's so different that they have sometimes a completely different perspective from you and something you never thought about, which is so cool. And it's why I love film so much. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful form of art. Next question I have for you is, the film is going through a lot of festivals, so I want to know, how are you feeling about that? Where is this movie going? Why do you think it's going to happen?
Well, I mean, I love, as you can tell, I love screening the film for, you know, with people. It's screened a lot in the States and frustratingly, circumstances haven't yet allowed us to be out in the States where it's been screening, but yeah, all the kind of UK ones it's done. We've tried to get to a screening in France, I think next month as well, so we'll go to that. And yeah, it's just great. It's just really nice to be sharing it with people and just having that response. Obviously, as I said, it's something that's been sat in the back of my head for a very long time. So for it to finally be out in the world is cathartic as a kind of release. You know, it's nice.
I bet. And you've worked across many different projects, you know, feature films, short films, TV. What was unique about directing this one? How was your process unique to this one specifically?
Yeah, I mean, this obviously is a very unique film. You know, it's sort of super personal, and you know, to the extent that it's actually shot on the actual bit of road outside my house where I left the original
Wow.
message. And yeah, I mean, and we actually, you know, I actually sort of, you know, obviously we prepped Sophia about that, and I hadn't been back there for about 7 8 years when we shot, and I sort of did warn her that I thought that going back there would be quite overwhelming, and you know, and I sort of had sort of done it kind of deliberately. I was sort of like, look, I'm not going to go, and then maybe the emotion I feel will give you some kind of like creative springboard to work from. And then when I got there, it was utterly normal, and I felt nothing, and it was just like, oh yeah, no, yeah, this is normal. But luckily, Sophia is far too good an actress to need any kind of bullshit psychological games like that. So you know, we were fine. She did an amazing performance without me breaking down in tears in front of her. So yeah, I don't know. It kind of like, in terms of the process, it wasn't. Like those elements, obviously, you know, that's not something that happens every time. But yeah, generally, we prep a lot and we think very hard about what we're trying to achieve. And then we kind of try and leave ourselves open to accidents, you know, which again happened a lot on this. You know, it's like it's the nice thing about this film, I think, is that, you know, although it is very contained and it's very much, you know, Sophia is the only character and it's just on her face. But the world around her absolutely intrudes and plays a really important part, and kind of some of the takes that, you know, were technically, you know, she got all the words right and Chris didn't fall over, and you know, kind of like, okay, we've got that, but they didn't quite have the magic. And then there were the takes where kind of, you know, cars would drive past at certain moments, and at one point, like a peloton of cyclists came by, and we almost used that take. But yeah, it's like the ones where the world kind of intruded, those accidents did seem to elevate it. It seemed to give her something to kind of bounce off and fight against. So yeah. But that's, I mean, again, that is something we always try and use when we can. I think we get quite frustrated with the process of filming where you kind of strip everything down and you control everything, and then in post you kind of add it all back in again. That always seems slightly kind of, you know, you sort of go, it just feels a bit fake, doesn't it? And you go, yeah, the noises you've added in feel fake compared to the noises that an hour ago you were taking out. Couldn't we just leave the noises in? You know, it's like sometimes we quite like the mess.
The decisions are made kind of in the spot depending on how you feel the movie has to turn out. It comes to you naturally sometimes by intuition, for sure. And you mentioned the story has been in the back of your head for a long time. What made you do it now?
Well, as I said before, it's kind of like Chris being a pedantic perfectionist, had given us these kind of narrow seasonal windows where the light would be right behind her head up that hill, and it would be sunny but cold and damp enough so that you get the moisture, because he needed her to be backlit by the sun. But cold so that her breath would form these sort of clouds around her face. And so basically it was a window in sort of March, February, March, and then another one in the autumn. And yeah, we'd sort of been trying to make it. Like, I think the actual dear old Liz, who is the voice of Susie on the answer phone, I think we recorded that with her about 4 or 5 years ago. And then that, intending that we would get around to it, and then that sat in a drawer. So yeah, it was more circumstance. It was more kind of like, you know, we every year we'd sort of go, right, this year we'll do it, and then something would happen, and we wouldn't get around to it. So, and then finally we did. So,
That's wonderful. And if you could describe the film in three words, what would they be?
I hope those words would be funny, painful, and provocative.
Good choices. And this is a question I always ask, since we give voice to emerging creatives out there. What's an advice you would give to young creatives who maybe want to tell a story similar to yours that is very personal to them, but maybe are afraid or don't know where to start or don't know how to put it on paper? What advice would you give?
That's a good question. I would say two almost totally contradictory things. One is to be totally honest. Like, audiences want your honesty. They want you to bare your heart. They want you to kind of like bring to the screen the thing that you are most troubled by, perhaps most ashamed of. But whilst I think you should be totally honest about that, I think it's important to note that, like, this is as best as I can remember the words that I actually said, and I'm not, proud of the humiliation for me, and sadly probably for Susie, that came out of this moment. But in writing it from the get-go, it was always written as a woman. I always wrote it for an actress rather than for me. And I think it was important to give it that unreality, that step away, so that it could become its own thing, so that it could take on its own life, so that there was scope. Like I said, I sort of told Sophia the story and, some more sort of background around it. But then we made certain that there was space for her to bring herself to it and to bring her own performance to it. And what you've ended up with is something that I think is emotionally very true, but is also not a documentary. It's not just kind of like, this is a thing that happened to me. It's kind of like, and I think that when you, again, that's those sort of collaborations, I think in opening it up to a creative collaboration with Sophia, I hope that we've opened it up for the audience as well, so that the audience can then come to that space and watch it and see and engage with it in a way that's comfortable and, moving.
Exactly. And what are some of your future projects, you and your brother? What are you guys planning on working on?
Yeah, so we've got a spy movie
Interesting.
that we've just attached an exciting executive producer to, which we've been working on for a while, which, yeah, we're very excited by. And that's kind of taking shape. And that's sort of in a very, very different way, another story of shame. And then that's sort of quite, the cast in that would be good fun. But then we've got a kind of a much lower budget film, which is a sort of detective thriller, kind of very contained, again, sort of female driven. But sort of we work our feature stuff, like our feature film Nina Forever, is again about grief, but it sort of comes at you like it's a horror movie, So I think kind of in the feature space, we tend to kind of have a genre element that we play with. We like to kind of like breathe life into genres and have fun with them. But yeah, so that's kind of those are the two at the moment that are kind of, hopefully one of those we'll get to shoot next year.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And is there a specific social media page or website that you guys share your work or more about this film and the festival, how it's doing?
Yeah, sure. So we've got our website, which is blamebrothers.co.uk, and then we're on Instagram as Blame Brothers or the Blame Brothers something. You'll find us if you search for Blame Brothers. It's
Perfect.
either us or a company who ride trucks around the US, so it's pretty easy to work out which one's which.
That's perfect. Those are all the questions that I have. I don't know if I've missed anything or if there's anything else that you want to mention.
No, that sounds amazing. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time, and I wish you the best luck with the film. And if you ever have any other projects, I would love to talk to you about them.
I'd love to talk to you too. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks for listening to Action Magazine, the podcast. Keep creating, keep dreaming, and stay in action. Catch you next week.